Chapter 23. Where the king used to point to the portrait of Prince Bulbo, which Sir Tommaso had left behind him, and say, "Which among you can paint a picture like that?" It hung in the royal parlor over the royal sideboard, and Princess Angelica could always look at it as she sat making the tea. Each day it seemed to grow handsomer and handsomer, and the princess grew so fond of looking at it that she would often spill the tea over the cloth, at which her father and mother would wink and wag their heads and say to each other, "Aha, we see how things are going." In the meantime, poor Giglio lay upstairs very sick in his chamber, though he took all the doctor's horrible medicines like a good young lad. As I hope you do, my dears, when you are ill, and Mama sends for the medical man. And the only person who visited Giglio besides his friend the captain of the guard, who was almost always busier on parade, was little Betsinda the housemaid, who used to do his bedroom and sitting room out, bring him his gruel, and warm his bed. When the little housemaid came to him in the morning and evening, Prince Giglio used to say, "Betsinda, Betsinda, how is the Princess Angelica?" And Betsinda used to answer, "The princess is very well, thank you, my lord." And Giglio would heave a sigh, and think, "If Angelica were sick, I am sure I should not be very well." Then Giglio would say, "Betsinda, has the Princess Angelica asked for me today?" And Betsinda would answer, "No, my lord, not today." Or, "She was very busy practicing the piano when I saw her." Or, "She was writing invitations for an evening party, and did not speak to me," or make some excuse or other, not strictly consonant with truth. For Betsinda was such a good-natured creature, that she strove to do everything to prevent annoyance to Prince Giglio, and even brought him up roast chicken and jellies from the kitchen when the doctor allowed them, and Giglio was getting better, saying that the princess had made the jelly, or the bread sauce, with her own hands, on purpose for Giglio. When Giglio heard this, he took heart, and began to mend immediately, and gobbled up all the jelly, and picked the last bone of the chicken drumsticks, Mary thought, sides bones, back, Pope's nose, and all thanking his dear Angelica, and he felt so much better the next day, that he dressed and went downstairs where, whom should he meet, but Angelica going into the drawing room? All the covers were off the chairs, the chandeliers taken out of the bags, the damask curtains uncovered, the work and things carried away, and the handsomest albums on the tables. Angelica had her hair in papers. In a word, it was evident there was going to be a party. "Heavens, Giglio!" cries Angelica, "colon, you here in such a dress. What a figure you are." "Yes, dear Angelica, I am come downstairs, and feel so well today, thanks to the fowl and the jelly." "What do I know about fowls and jellies, that you allude to them in that rude way?" says Angelica. "Why, didn't you send them, Angelica dear?" says Giglio. "I sent them indeed, Angelica dear." "No, Giglio dear," says she, mocking him, "I was engaged in getting the rooms ready for His Royal Highness the Prince of Crim Tartary, who is coming to pay my papa's court a visit." "The Prince of Crim Tartary?" Giglio said, aghast. "Yes, the Prince of Crim Tartary," says Angelica, mocking him. "Dare say you never heard of such a country. What did you ever hear of? You don't know whether Crim Tartary is on the Red Sea, or on the Black Sea, I dare say." "Yes, I do. It's on the Red Sea," says Giglio, at which the princess burst out laughing at him, and said, "Oh, you ninny. You are so ignorant, you are really not fit for society. You know nothing but about horses and dogs, and are only fit to dine in a mess room with my royal father's heaviest dragoons. Don't look so surprised at me, sir. Go and put your best clothes on to receive the prince, and let me get the drawing room ready." Giglio said, "Oh, Angelica, Angelica, I didn't think this of you. This wasn't your language to me, when you gave me this ring, and I gave you mine in the garden, and you gave me that K, but what K was we never shall know," for Angelica, in a rage, cried, "Get out, you saucy, rude creature. How dare you to remind me of your rudeness? As for your little trumpery twopenny ring, there, sir, there. And she flung it out of the window. It was my mother's marriage ring, cried Giglio. I don't care whose marriage ring it was, cries Angelica. Marry the person who picks it up, if she's a woman, you shan't marry me. And give me back my ring. I've no patience with people who boast about the things they give away. I know who'll give me much finer things than you ever gave me. A beggarly ring indeed, not worth 5 shillings. Now Angelica little knew that the ring which Giglio had given her was a fairy ring. If a man wore it, it made all the women in love with him. If a woman, all the gentlemen. The queen, Giglio's mother, quite an ordinary looking person, was admired immensely whilst she wore this ring, and her husband, and was frantic when she was ill. But when she called her little Giglio to her, and put the ring on his finger, King Savio did not seem to care for his wife so much anymore, but transferred all his love to little Giglio. So did everybody love him, as long as he had the ring. But when, as quite a child, he gave it to Angelica, people began to love and admire her, and Giglio, as the saying is, played only second fiddle. Yes, says Angelica, going on in her foolish ungrateful way. No who'll give me much finer things than your beggarly little pearl nonsense. Very good, miss. You may take back your ring too, says Giglio, his eyes flashing fire at her, and then, as his eyes had been suddenly opened, he cried out, ha! What does this mean? Is this the woman I have been in love with all my life? Have I been such a ninny as to throw away my regard upon you? Why actually yes, you are a little crooked. Oh, you wretch, cries Angelica. And, upon my conscience, you squint a little. Eh? Cries Angelica. And your hair is red, and you are marked with the smallpox, and what, you have 3 false teeth and 1 leg shorter than the other. You brute, you, Angelica screamed out. And as she seized the ring with one hand, she dealt Giglio 1, 2, 3 smacks on the face, and would have pulled the hair off his head, had he not started laughing, and crying, oh dear me, Angelica, don't pull out my hair, it hurts. You might remove a great deal of your own, as I perceive, without scissors or pulling at all. Oh, ho, ho. Ha, ha, ha. He, he, he. And he nearly choked himself with laughing, and she with rage, when, with a low bow, and dressed in his court habit, Count Gambabella, the first lord-in-waiting, entered and said, Royal Highnesses, their majesties expect you in the pink throne room, where they await the arrival of the Prince of Crim Tartary. Via! How Gruffanuff picked the fairy ring up, and Prince Bulbo came to court. Prince Bulbo's arrival had set all the court in a flutter. Everybody was ordered to put his or her best clothes on. The footmen had their gala liveries, the Lord Chancellor his new wig, the guards their last new tunics, and Countess Gruffanuff, you may be sure, was glad of an opportunity of decorating her old person with her finest things. She was walking through the court of the palace on her way to wait upon their majesties, when she espied something glittering on the pavement, and bade the boy in buttons who was holding up her train to go and pick up the article shining yonder. He was an ugly little wretch, in some of the late groom porter's old clothes cut down, and much too tight for him. And yet, when he had taken up the ring as it turned out to be, and was carrying it to his mistress, she thought he looked like a little Cupid. He gave the ring to her. It was a trumpery little thing enough, but too small for any of her old knuckles, so she put it into her pocket. Oh, Mum, says the boy, looking at her, how beautiful you do look, Mum, today, Mum. And you too, Jackie, she was going to say, but, looking down at him, no, he was no longer good looking at all, but only the carroty haired little Jackie of the morning. However, praise is welcome from the ugliest of men or boys, and Gruffanuff, bidding the boy hold up her train, walked on in high good humor. The guards saluted her with peculiar respect. Captain Hedzoff, in the anteroom, said, my dear madam, you look like an angel today. And so, bowing and smirking, Gruffanuff went in, and took her place behind her royal master and mistress, who were in the throne room, awaiting the Prince of Crim Tartary. Princess Angelica sat at their feet, and behind the king's chair stood Prince Giglio, looking very savage. The Prince of Crim Tartary made his appearance, attended by Baron Sleaboots, his chamberlain, and followed by a black page carrying the most beautiful crown you ever saw. He was dressed in his traveling costume, and his hair, as you see, was a little in disorder. "Have ridden 300 miles since breakfast," said he, "so eager was I to behold the Prince, the court and august family of Paphlagonia, and I could not wait 1 minute before appearing in your majesty's presences." Giglio, from behind the throne, burst out into a roar of contemptuous laughter, but all the royal party, in fact, were so flurried that they did not hear this little outbreak. "RR. H is welcome in any dress," says the king. "Lomboso, a chair for his royal highness." "Any dress his royal highness wears is a court dress," says Princess Angelica, smiling graciously. "Ah, but you should see my other clothes," said the prince. "Should have had them on, but that stupid carrier has not brought them." "Who's that laughing?" It was Giglio laughing. "Was laughing," he said, "because you said just now that you were in such a hurry to see the princess, that you could not wait to change your dress, and now you say you come in those clothes, because you have no others." "And who are you?" says Prince Bulbo, very fiercely. "My father was king of this country, and I am his only son, prince," replies Giglio, with equal haughtiness. "Ha!" said the king and Glomboso, looking very flurried. But the former, collecting himself, said, "Dear Prince Bulbo, I forgot to introduce to your royal highness my dear nephew, his royal highness Prince Giglio. Know each other. Embrace each other. Giglio, give his royal highness your hand." And Giglio, giving his hand, squeezed poor Bulbo's until the tears ran out of his eyes. Glomboso now brought a chair for the royal visitor, and placed it on the platform on which the king, queen, and prince were seated, but the chair was on the edge of the platform, and as Bulbo sat down, it toppled over, and he with it, rolling over, and bellowing like a bull. Giglio roared still louder at this disaster, but it was with laughter, so did all the court, when Prince Bulbo got up, for though when he entered the room he appeared not very ridiculous, as he stood up from his fall for a moment he looked so exceedingly plain and foolish, that nobody could help laughing at him. When he had entered the room, he was observed to carry a rose in his hand, which fell out of it as he tumbled. "My rose, my rose!" cried Bulbo, and his chamberlain dashed forwards, and picked it up, and gave it to the prince, who put it in his waistcoat. Then people wondered why they had laughed. There was nothing particularly ridiculous in him. He was rather short, rather stout, rather red-haired, but, in fine, for a prince, not so bad. So they sat and talked, the royal personages together, the Crim Tartar officers with those of Paphlagonia, Giglio very comfortable with Gruffanuff behind the throne. He looked at her with such tender eyes, that her heart was all in a flutter. "H, dear prince," she said, "how could you speak so haughtily in presence of their majesties? I protest I thought I should have fainted." "I should have caught you in my arms," said Giglio, looking raptures. "Why were you so cruel to Prince Bulbo, dear prince?" says Gruff. "Because I hate him," says Gil. "You are jealous of him, and still love poor Angelica," cries Gruffanuff, putting her handkerchief to her eyes. "I did, but I love her no more," Giglio cried. "Despise her. Were she heiress to 20,000 thrones, I would despise her and scorn her. But why speak of thrones? I have lost mine. I am too weak to recover it. I am alone, and have no friend." "Oh, say not so, dear prince," says Gruffanuff. "Besides," says he, "I am so happy here behind the throne, that I would not change my place, no, not for the throne of the world." "What are you two people chattering about there?" says the queen, who was rather good-natured, though not overburthened with wisdom. It is time to dress for dinner. Giglio, show Prince Bulbo to his room. Prince, if your clothes have not come, we shall be very happy to see you as you are. But when Prince Bulbo got to his bedroom, his luggage was there and unpacked, and the hairdresser coming in, cut and curled him entirely to his own satisfaction. And when the dinner bell rang, the royal company had not to wait above 5 and 20 minutes until Bulbo appeared, during which time the king, who could not bear to wait, grew as sulky as possible. As for Giglio, he never left Madame Gruffanuff all this time, but stood with her in the embrasure of a window, paying her compliments. At length the groom of the chambers announced His Royal Highness the Prince of Crim Tartary, and the noble company went into the royal dining room. It was quite a small party, only the king and queen, the princess, whom Bulbo took out, the two princes, Countess Gruffanuff, Glumboso the Prime Minister, and Prince Bulbo's chamberlain. You may be sure they had a very good dinner. Let every boy or girl think of what he or she likes best, and fancy it on the table. Asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. Here a very pretty game may be played by all the children saying what they like best for dinner. The princess talked incessantly all dinner time to the Prince of Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.